Well, welcome everyone to Labor Day Picnic 2016. And a special welcome to Aunt Fanny and Uncle Noe. I hope Fanny's somewhere here. There we go. My mother's sister. We are very pleased to have you here, and cousins as well. School just started, and so we're going to have a math quiz first. Who can tell me what the ratio of an igloo's circumference is to its diameter? Well, it's obvious. It's Eskimo pie. Okay, now that you kind of know where I'm going with this, what's the ratio of a jack-o'-lantern's circumference to its diameter? It's pumpkin pie, my favorite. Yeah, that's my kind of math. All right, so this is easier. What is 1/1,000,000th of a fish? A microfish. Yeah, and this is for people who are out there. You will know this. What is a trillion pins called? It's related to a turtle. It's a terrapin. All right. We're not really into math tonight, are we? Let's do something else. I want to talk to you a little bit about some people who have lived in West Africa for thousands of years. They're the, I have to have my glasses to see. They were younger than I was. The Nansi people. And they came to this country on ships to be sold as slaves. And they had a special role that they played in their part of the world. They were the tellers of stories. So they brought some of their stories with them. And I think most of you know some of these stories, even though you don't know where they came from. The Nansi people saw all the animals in the forest and on the plain as their brothers. And so they called everything by that name. They said it was Brother Rabbit and Brother Fox and Brother Skunk and Brother Snake. And the way they said it, they didn't say it very well when they learned English. They said, brr, brr rabbit, brr, brr fox. And most of us know about the brr rabbit stories, right? They came right from West Africa with those people. And they had a very special brother among the animals, and his name was Anansi. He was the spider. And the spider told the stories. And there are many, many, many stories about Anansi because they're the kinds of stories that children love because Anansi was not only greedy, he was terribly lazy. So that's the kind of story children like to hear. Right? Yeah, because it makes them feel better about themselves. So, one day, Anansi decided to go on a little walk down to the river. And on his way, he sniffed. Somebody was cooking greens. And he sniffed a little further. It was Br'er Rabbit. And he said, "Hi, Br'er Rabbit. I just smelled your lunch." And Br'er Rabbit said, "Oh, yeah, I'm cooking greens, and you're welcome to have some with me, but they won't be ready for another 30 minutes. Just stick around and you can share with me." Well, Anansi knew that Br'er Rabbit always gave people jobs as soon as they sat down in his yard. So he said, "You know what? I'll just come back when it's ready. But how will I know when it's 30 minutes? And he said, "I know. I'm going to spin a web and I'm going to tie it around one of my legs. And I'll leave the other end here, right by your porch. And when the greens are ready, you just give a good pull on that string, and I'll know." "It's a great idea," said Br'er Rabbit. And Anansi walked on down towards the river. Well, pretty soon he smelled something else. It was beans bubbling in a big pot over at the monkeys. Brother Monkey was cooking beans for his whole family. And Anansi said, "Oh, Father Monkey, those are wonderful beans you're cooking over there. And all the little children monkeys came, oh, Anansi, you must stay and eat them with us. They were so excited. And Anansi said, well, I'd like to, but they're not ready yet, and I have some things I have to do down by the river. So let me just spin a little rope here, tie it to another one of my legs, and when the beans are ready, you just give a good hard pull, and I'll know. And he kept on walking. Next, he came by Hog's house, and Hog was cooking sweet potatoes. Ooh, Anansi loves sweet potatoes. But he said, you know, I've got stuff to do. They're not ready. And he spun another rope and tied it to another leg. And Hog thought that was a wonderful idea. And off went Anansi down to the river. And on the way, he kept on accepting invitations until every one of his eight legs had a string tied to it all the way back to each front porch. And when he got to the river, the greens were ready. And Rabbit came over and gave a mighty tug. And Anansi went over like this, kind of like the earthquake yesterday, day before yesterday morning. And then the monkey children pulled over here, and Anansi went over that way. And pretty soon he was stretched out flat with eight legs pulled just as hard as they could be pulled in all directions. And it hurt a lot, but nobody could hear him whimper and carry on because he was too far away. And finally, he stumbled into the river, and the water dissolved those ropes. Oh, did that ever feel good? And he got himself all out and proceeded back. And he found that his legs had been stretched out three times longer than they'd ever been before and very skinny. And that's why spiders have skinny long legs to this day. And I'll have you know that greedy little pig, he did not get one bite to eat that evening. So that's Anansi for you. You know him now a little bit. Yeah. Surely there's some wise things to say about Anansi. Let's see if I can find any. Selfishness, greed, and apathy. Here's one. Gus Speth said this. He said, in April, he said, he's a U.S. advisor on climate change. He said, I used to think that top environmental problems were biodiversity loss, ecosystem collapse, and climate change. I thought that 30 years of good science could address these problems. I was wrong. The top environmental problems are selfishness, greed, and apathy. And to deal with these, we need a cultural and a spiritual transformation. And we scientists don't know how to do that. Isn't that interesting? I think the Anansi people would have known. They would have known because they had these stories. Well, there was another story, but where is it? Ha, here. Yeah, he's greedy and lazy in this story, too. So, there was this little girl. She was about 11, and she would go out of the village into the bush to look for food. And she always brought back stuff that was a little sweeter, a little nicer than anybody else. And people looked at that. The plums she brought were bigger and purpler and juicier. The oranges were always the biggest and the nicest. And people wondered where she found those. But never did they dare ask because they were pretty sure it was her secret. But Anansi, he had no shame. And he just went up to that little girl and she said, little girl, would you show me where you get those wonderful bananas? And the little girl, she was very polite. She said, oh, yes, Anansi, come with me. It's a long way. You have to go way into the bush to find these things. Oh, yeah, I'll go along. He was thinking, I'll find out where all the nice stuff is and get it for myself. So off they went, tra-la-la-la-la-la, out into the bush, down into the dark, tall trees, and find a phone rang. He said, don't, no, that's Red Riding Hood. No. Where was I? Anansi, yeah, Anansi and the little girl, right. So they were going down into the deep, dark woods. And the big bad, no, not the big bad wolf. Well, I'll get this, I will. Anyway, and Anansi was like, oh, this is so wonderful. And I'd like to, and then the little girl said, well, you know, up ahead is this little plum tree, and there aren't many plums on it. When there's only a few plums, they're sweeter than when it's a huge tree full of plums. And immediately Anansi elbowed the little girl to the side with one of his eight elbows, skinny and long, and rushed the tree, climbed up, and gobbled down all of those wonderful, sweet plums. Oh, blah, he did. And then he said, ooh, that was tasty. Now, little girl, where are the bananas? And the little girl was polite. She said, well, you'll have to follow me. They're quite a ways further. They walked down the path, and finally they came to this wonderful banana tree, all golden and perfectly ripe. And again, Anansi elbowed the little girl out of the way and climbed the tree and gobbled all the bananas. He almost burst. He was so full. But he was greedy, and it felt good to him. And then the little girl said, well, Anansi, you've eaten a lot. Maybe you don't want to find the best honey in the whole bush. And, oh, yeah, absolutely, I want that too. And so they went further and further down the path until they came to an enormous bee tree. And there was a little hole there, the bottom of the bee tree. And the little girl said, now, Anansi, to get this wonderful honey, you have to go through the little hole. And then you eat the honey in there. Anansi elbowed her out of the way and went right through that little hole and ate the sweet golden honey until he couldn't hold any more. But then there was a problem. He tried to get back out of the hole. And he couldn't because he'd swollen up so big he didn't fit. Well, the little girl smiled and said, Anansi, looks like you are having problems. And I said, help me. And she said, well, I'm not sure I can. Well, shout for help. I need help. And the little girl said, you know, if you wouldn't have been so greedy and so selfish, this wouldn't have happened to you. Well, Anansi said, oh, I am so sorry. And the little girl said, you're not sorry. You're just sorry you're stuck. Well, Anansi knew she was right, but he really wanted to get out of that tree, and he said, please, little girl, shout for help so somebody comes and gets me out of here. Well, the little girl smiled and said, okay, I'll call for help. And she said in her best little whisper, she said, help. There's a greedy, selfish little spider stuck in the tree. Help. Well, Anansi knew that wasn't going to do any good. So he shouted as loud as he could, but he didn't have a big voice or a microphone, and he was inside the big tree, so nobody heard him. Finally, the little girl said, well, Anansi, I think I'm going to go down to the beautiful orange tree and gather huge, delicious oranges for my family. Do you want to come find out where it is? And she trotted off down the path and left Anansi to his own devices. That's Anansi for you. So here's a quote that kind of works with that. This is what Anansi should have listened to. He said, this is a quote from, who's this from? It's from Albert Einstein. We all know about him. He said, try not to become a man of success, but rather try to become a man of value. Anansi should have listened to that one, shouldn't he have? Yeah. Yeah, well, let's see here. I presided over a wonderful workshop last Wednesday evening right over there. And, you know, we talked about aging, and not just any old aging, but aging gracefully. And I heard wonderful stories, and I share a few stories Not that I'm old, but I've observed other people doing this. And I'm not sure if I encouraged all of you enough to visit with old people, but I'll just give you a little story that I got yesterday. Now, I was over east of here, and I went into the Presbyterian Manors nursing home just to do a little business and to look around, see what the competition is up to. And so I was just kind of la-la-la-la, acting like I, you know, was the, you know, chairman of the board and stuff. And looking around, and I had this person I wanted to see, you know, so saw him, you know, for a few minutes, and then I was on my way back out, and I got into the elevator. They have an elevator over there. It's two stories. You can go down or you can go up. Went in there, and just with me came this stately elderly lady. And we pushed the buttons. Which floor do you want? Well, of course, down one. I mean, what options do we have? Are you getting out? Yeah, I'm getting out. Sure. Well, yeah. And then she started talking. Because old people do that sometimes. They just start talking. It doesn't take a lot to get them primed sometimes. Not this one. I found out her name was Eleanor N. Eleanor, yeah, that's a nice name. There was this girl named Eleanor back in Deutschhof in 1984. She was beautiful. Whenever I hear the word Eleanor, the name Eleanor, I always think of her. Yep. She even spoke a little bit of English. Well, Eleanor proceeded to tell me a good portion of her life story, the interesting part. She said, You know, when I was a young woman, she was 87, she said. Now, this was a long time ago. She said, I went to school to become a nurse, because I wanted to be a nurse. And then I went and I looked with MCC, Mennonite Central Committee. I wanted to be a missionary nurse. They sent me to Tegucigalpa, Honduras. I barely said a word through this whole story. I don't even know how it got started. But she said, I worked down there, and I had another nurse that worked with me. Her name was Jean. And we worked for a number of years, and then our time was up, and we came back to Newton. And I needed a job, and it was 1969. And somebody said, you know what? Third shift down at the Cessna plant in Wichita, they need a nurse. And if you go apply, you will get that job. Well, so Eleanor went and she applied. And she met with Mr. Myers. Mr. Myers was the chief something or other of third shift. And he interviewed her and immediately hired her and showed her her nurse station where she'd be in case somebody got an owie, they could come and she could fix. And they'd be right back on the line, you know, making airplanes again. So she was all set up there. Well, third shift, as you all know, it starts around late at night and goes until about morning. So it's kind of awful if you're not used to it. And she was a little concerned because the doors weren't locked. And she was kind of alone over to the side here. And she was thinking, a thug could just walk in off the street and clunk me in the head, and nobody would know. So she said to Mr. Myers, I'm concerned for my safety. And he said, okay, I'll solve that. And he went and he got a 40-cup coffee brewing machine, installed it in her little office with a big rack of paper cups here, and then when the foreman had their break, they went over there and drank coffee there and sat around. And that way, every hour, there was a break for different bunches of foremen, and they could check to see if she was clunked in the head or not. It was a wonderful arrangement, except coffee break was only for 10 minutes. And these people, they'd sit there, drink their coffee, and they'd ask me questions. And then I told them stories, the stories I knew. There was about nursing in Tegucigalpa, Honduras. And then they wouldn't go, and it wasn't my job to tell them to go back to work. They just sat there, wanted more stories. And one evening, Mr. Meyer showed up, and it was like 15 minutes after the break had started. And he was all white around his mouth. And he said, "People are looking for you. What are you doing in here?" And everybody just kind of cowered because Mr. Myers was not a person to be trifled with. And he said, "We were just listening to stories." And they scurried out. And he said, "I want to see everybody in a half an hour in my office." And when they all scurried out, he turned to Eleanor and said, "Eleanor, I don't ever want you mixing work and religion again." Ooh. And then the odd thing was, they'd still come, and they'd still drink coffee, and these foremen, they would ask me to go out and have breakfast with them, because breakfast happened right after they got off work. And I never did that. Bunch of guys, you can't trust men like that. And Mr. Myers would too. He wanted her to come with them to breakfast. I never did. And one day, Mr. Myers came in there when nobody was there. He said, "Eleanor, why don't you go out to eat breakfast with us?" And she said, because you're not a Christian and I don't go out for breakfast with men who aren't Christians. And he said, "But Eleanor, I want to become a Christian." "Oh, can you show me how?" And I gave him the address of my church. It was the Bible Church over there on Broadway. And the name of my pastor, and as soon as he went out of that room, I called my pastor and I told him that Mr. Myers might be coming and why. All right, he did show up. And I checked later with my pastor and he said, "Yes, indeed. I had a conversation with him, and we did the sinner's prayer, and I believe he is a Christian now." So Mr. Myers came back and said, "Now what do I do?" And I told him, "You need a good Bible." And so he went off, and later I got a phone call from him. He was down in the Christian bookstore over there on Douglas, and he was calling and said, "There's a whole wall full of Bibles here. Which one?" So I told him, "Give the phone to the clerk at the register." And I told the clerk, you get him the best Schofield reference Bible you've got. And so she did. And when he came around, he had his Bible. It was huge. And then he wanted me to have Bible study with him. I said, "No, well, Look, I'll talk to the pastor," and the pastor said, "I'll take care of this." And he got a deacon to meet with Mr. Myers at IHOP on Saturday mornings. Well, that didn't last long. Mr. Myers did not like the deacon. He said he's always late, and he doesn't even bring his Bible. And then he asked me if I drink, and I said no. And he said, "Well, I think it's okay to do social drinking." And Mr. Myers said, "I don't drink because my father was an alcoholic, and he abused my mother, and he was horrid to us children. I will never, ever do that. And I'm not sure I want to meet with this deacon anymore. I pay for his breakfast. He's late. He doesn't read his Bible, and he wants to talk about stuff like this." So there's a problem, right? "So why don't you teach me how to do the Bible?" Well, Eleanor's like, "Let me think about this." And she called her friend Jean and said, "Jean, I have a problem, and you have to help me." And so Saturday mornings for the next good little while, Jean and Eleanor would meet with Mr. Myers, and they would do Bible study because she knew how to do that, being a missionary nurse and everything. And then she said, "Well, what Mr. Myers was trying to do after a while, he was trying to get rid of Jean. Yeah, yeah, just plain. She caught on. Yeah, she's a smart woman. So I said, well, how did that go? Well, he did. He asked me to marry him. And this was about 6 months into this. And I said, did you say yes? And she said, well, you know, I had time to see. And I truly believe that he changed. He had a meeting with all of the foremen, and he said, things are going to be different now in this plant. This was not long after he met with the pastor and came to Jesus. He said, things are going to be different now. We're going to do things different here. And everybody was just kind of like, well, yes, sure. You know, you're the boss of third shift. And she said she was on hand when the lady fell asleep. She was deburring pieces for airplane wings, you know, at the deburring bench. And she was just sleeping there in her chair holding the piece as if she was deburring it, but she wasn't. And somebody found her, a foreman saw her, and hustled her in. It's like, Mr. Myers has got something to say here. And sat her down, and he'd said also, I have to point this out, he said, one of the things we're going to do is anybody that comes in or has a problem, we are going to pray with them. And people were really nervous about this. Mixing work and religion. I mean, hey, didn't we say something about that a while back? So here's this woman, she was just kind of like, oh, I'm going to lose my job. And he's like, okay, you know, the union steward and the foreman were here, and he said, look, I'm gonna have a talk here, and you're welcome to stay, or you can leave, and we're going to pray. Well, they both stayed because they were terribly curious to hear him pray. They never heard Mr. Myers pray before. He said, so you fell asleep. This is dangerous. You could have fallen into the deburring machine. What happened? And the lady's like, you know, I didn't mean to, but my children were sick at home yesterday, and I couldn't get any sleep all yesterday, and I had to come to work with no sleep, and I just couldn't stay awake. Mr. Myers said, well, I still have to give you a warning because you fell asleep, but I'll tell you what I will do. I'm going to pass the hat around at break time, and they collected enough money for her to buy babysitting for her children for the next 2 days so that she could get a nap in and come to work and still work during the night. And Eleanor said there were several other interesting things that happened. Third shift worked 6.5 hours and had fewer people than first shift or second shift. But the higher ups, who only came to work during the day, noticed that more parts were being deburred and more stuff was being assembled in third shift than in either first or second shift anymore. Eleanor said that whole shift, with hundreds and hundreds of people in it, was producing better, it was a better place to work, it was a wonderful change, just simply because of Mr. Myers there. And so when 6 months into the Bible study, he popped the question, she realized he probably was good for his word there. And so, did you marry him? Yeah, I did. And how long were you married? 40 years. He died in 2012. And he was a wonderful man, and we had a wonderful life together. And now I live over in that apartment over on the other side of the chapel over there. It's an independent living apartment. It's beautiful. And I've had a wonderful, blessed life. And oh, I am so sorry. I've kept you here. You probably have things to do. Goodbye. That was Eleanor Enns. I'd never seen her in my life before until yesterday afternoon at about 2 o'clock. And about 2:30, I walked out of there with this story. And what I want you to know is there's stories like that lurking in just about every skull in here. And the older the skull is and the less hair or the whiter it is, the more interesting those stories will be. So I encourage you to just go loiter just go loiter over there at Mennonite Friendship Communities, and you might not even have to open your mouth. You might just get a story that's even better than Eleanor Ence's story. And it'll be for free. I mean, how could you turn that down? Well, that was quite a range, from Anansi to Eleanor. I got kind of carried away there. I don't even know how I was going to finish this. Let's see here. Oh, this isn't exactly related to anything else, but this is going to be the last wise thing here. A wise and holy man once asked, "What is forgiveness?" And his friend said, "It is the fragrance that flowers give when they are crushed." I thought that was pretty good. I'm just going to end on that. Thank you for listening to me. Go out and gather stories. Is there...